to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point. This is Danny Tierce Johnson.
Hello, welcome to Let's Talk. Joining here today, we've got Wes Conlon, former footballer, and this year he's done the Goggins Challenge. I'm going to spread some love to you today. We're going to talk about the one percenters of our community doing great things to spread inspiration and the positive message of what we do as blackfellas. Wes, welcome to the show today, mate.
Yeah, thanks heaps, Danny. I'd like to acknowledge my ancestors too, the Kalali and Waka Waka people. And also the traditional people of this land here, Yuggera and Turrbal. But yeah, it's so I'm so blessed and honoured to be here. Such a deadly place, Murray Country. You know?
Yeah, there you sort of walked in the centre of black excellence today, and you were quite taken by the joint, as was I when I first walked in here.
Yeah. It's so deadly to see, you know, we come so far as blackfellas. It's just amazing.
Can you start the show by telling us your mob and your country, bros, where you grew up and a bit about yourself, please?
So, yeah, like I said, Kalali and Waka Waka man. Grew up, born in Brisbane, but grew up out Ipswich way. On my mother's side, I got the Conlons, and on my father's side, the Bonds. And being a young fella, I've been told, you know, this your uncle, this your auntie, this your mob, this your cousin. I've got the biggest family, so my little fella, he hits me up there. Am I related to this fella? And I said, that's your cousin, that's your uncle. So, yeah, I pitched, you know, like, we're all mob, we're all one. So, yeah.
Nah, deadly, bro. Look, you've had quite a career as a footballer. Big Q Cup player, which is, I guess, just off the NRL, isn't it?
Yeah. You know? It's the second tier down. Being in that Q Cup system, we had NRL players filter back down through, but just the training and the commitment it took, you know, at that level, it was so deadly to also travel around and, you know, play alongside other deadly players like, you know, I got to play with Ben Hunt and, you know, played against Tau Malolo and these types of names. You think, you know, it's just I want to take a photo and get autographs from him instead of play against him. Big Petro too, and Matty Bowen, you know, they're my idols. I used to look up to them. But, yeah, that Intrust Cup, I really had fun. I really had fun cruising around, playing footy and, you know, getting paid to do it. So that was deadly as well.
Quite a journey though, you know, with the rugby league and stuff like that. Can you tell us some of the challenges when you started playing professionally? I know it's, you know, we were talking yesterday when we had a bit of a pre-chat about this, but football can be very clinical and very one-dimensional when you get into the professional era, as whereas blackfellas like the freedom of footy and playing in the backyard with the cuzzies and chip and chase and all this sort of stuff. What's some of the challenges you found, and then what were some of the good things that helped you sort of go on to sort of the next level?
Yeah. So being from Ipswich, I played my rugby league out of there, juniors coming up, and I got to the stage where, you know, we won the grand final, and I literally, I got pushed out. So many of the, you know, local, you know, uncles I call them and other footy players, and they gave me that, they instilled that belief in me, said, you got to go, you got to go to Cup, you got to get out and you can do it. Because that's the main thing is the self-belief. I didn't believe in myself. I left Ipswich and I decided to go down to South Logan. Total different training, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Friday nights, you know, that I was in that cycle with the boys. You know, we're chilling, we're kicking back, we're going to the pub or, you know, having a few beers and this and that. But training on a Friday night I found changed me. Mm-hmm. And that
what was it about the Friday night training that changed you?
I'm too buggered to do anything. I came home.
Didn't want to go to the pub after?
No, nothing. Yeah, I came home, got home about 9 o'clock, 9:30 every Friday night, and just showing up, it changed my direction and my path. And that's what rugby league can do. It's more than a game. It built me resilience and gave me the skills, you know, to deal with these hard times. But going down there, I was so scared being a young, you know, Murray fella from Ipswich, not knowing anyone, big city. And going down there, I ran into my cousin, Uncle Mop. You know, he's got a son, Dennis Moppy Boy, and he was down there. So I had my cousin that was there, and it was just so welcoming. And all the black fellas, shout out to Philly Dennis, you know, he's a cup great, most cup games. He was down there.
So this is Mop and the Dropouts.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
them
Uncle Mop's son.
Yeah.
Moppy Boy, yeah.
Wow.
They were all down there, and it just, all the black fellas and South really, you know, such a family, such a deadly club. I really enjoyed the time and enjoyed the training, and it really took my game to another level. But with that, we had the deal with the Raiders back then. So the Raiders come up, and whoever they brought up to play for Cup, they got dropped back from the NRL team. Then we had to change our roster for them.
Yep.
So a lot of the times I was up and down, Cup back to Fogs. But I loved going up and playing in Cup and, you know, testing myself. But I knew deep down in myself, you know, I'm better than these fellas. You know, I have the fitness, I have the skills and this and that. But playing off the cuff footy, coming straight into it, you can't really do that. Yeah. I got sort of pulled aside. Some of the things I did, it was eyes up, just eyes up footy,
yeah.
Play whatever's in front of me proper. But I went through a depression. I was at South for 2.5 years, and I went through, you know, some mental problems. I was depressed. I hated rugby league. I hated just.
Why did you hate it?
Because
what was it made you hate it?
It was the pressure. The pressure.
Yep.
The pressure got to me. I had a manager. We were sorting out deals, you know, with a few clubs. But I didn't like it one bit.
Because it's really, with the explosion of rugby league for the women's game, mm-hmm. now that we're seeing, and also young brothers coming through, it's really important to hear this sort of stuff.
Yeah,
to sort of help develop your coping mechanisms, understand the pressures fella from community.
Mm, so the reason I played, and ever since I was young, and I loved it, it's backyard footy, I played for the fun, and I played with my brothers, and it was just, it's a deadly game, rugby league. But I think the fun got taken out of my game,
yep.
and it became serious and a job, and I hated it, and I quit. I quit. I didn't want to play anymore. I went home to the missus, you know, crying, going through the mental problems, all the emotions, and I just felt like I needed to back away. So I quit, I think, 2013. When I quit, South Logan were top of the ladder. I remember kicking a field goal to beat Mackay, I'm pretty sure, and Mackay won it that year. So I quit. I walked away, and all the boys and...
How old was you when you walked away, Kaz?
23.
Wow.
23, 24.
That's when you should be at your prime, right?
Yeah. So I backed away. Looking at all that now, I wouldn't change a thing, because it when one door closes, they say many more open. And so what opened from that, you know, I backed away. Me and the missus, we went camping. We did other things, and it kept my mind off footy, and I loved it. But the end of that year, I get a phone call from Ben Walker. His son now is playing at the Roosters, Sam Walker. He's a gun.
Walker's on.
Yeah, and Chrissy, shout out to Chrissy. He's amazing. Chrissy Walker, I'll just go down there for a second. He just walked a couple of last year, I'm pretty sure, he walked from Cairns to the coast.
Yeah.
And that's just mind-blowing to think someone can do that. He was doing something like 30 Ks a day. Unbelievable stuff. So shout out to Chrissy Walker down on the coast there. But, yeah, back to Ben. He gave me a call out of the blue. I had, you know, I didn't know this number. I didn't know how he got my number, but I picked it up. And he said, hey, Wes, it's Ben Walker here, you know, from the Jets, da-da-da-da. Come to training. He wanted me to go to training just to see how they train. And again, the emotions came back, and I'm thinking, oh, not this again. But the missus just said, just go and have a look. I went down. These fellas are playing backyard footy, playing touch, playing soccer, playing AF, like forcey backs down at the park, you know, you kick it back and that. They're playing all these games, and I'm thinking, is this rugby league? Like, is this...
They brought the fun back.
Oh, and we all say it, like backyard footy. There's nothing that can beat backyard footy, eyes up. So Ben Walker and Shane Walker, that's what they adapted. And they really let you play your own game. They let each of us bring to the table what we know best. So I could literally, I had a free-for-all, do what you want. And there were games, and with the Jets, we won it in 2015, but that took years of build-up to get there. And with the games, there were the first two coaches that I was under that never blew up. They never revved anybody. They pulled you aside and they spoke to you as a human and they asked, how's home? How's work? How's your missus? How's your kids? And it made you feel, you know, just that, that's, and get it off your chest. Mm. And that's why, you know, certain things happen and whatnot. But they really, I didn't see them as coaches. I seen them as older brothers or older uncles. They were just so
fantastic to hear. I remember when that happened with the Ipswich Jets and they're getting talked about like the Harlem Globetrotters because they're just doing freaky stuff on the field, just eyes up football, as you call it.
Yes.
Use a flick pass and use a chipping and chasing, had that Benji Marshall sort of vibe about you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just so fun to watch.
Mm.
But it's just a testament to the Walker brothers to be able to bring that back and sort of change the game when it's so clinical and dry sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So I literally was pinching myself there. It was so amazing to do that stuff on such a, you know, on TV. But I go back, as a young fella, I used to run, you know, the sand out and that for my local, you know, black fella team there. Shout out to Cambou, and all the little knockouts that I went to when I was little. And I was seeing black fellas do this easy with no training, you know, and we have it in us. It's that natural gifted talent. Just nursed and pushed in the right direction, and you're looking at it like on look at Cody and you look at Latrell and these fellas, Fox, they're unbelievable. Just coached and steered in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, just machines. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Wesley Collin. We're talking about overcoming challenges in life. We're talking about mental health. We're talking about having a positive mindset. We had a bit of a shaky start to the show there. Sorry, peoples. A few tech issues here, so I wasn't sure if we're on air or not, but we're getting there, and it's just great to have Wesley in. On Fridays here at Let's Talk, we want to be talking about positive things. We want to talk to the 1%ers in your communities. We want to spread the black love and inspiration because we feel it's not talked about enough, do we, Wesley?
Yeah.
We were saying just before in the news cycle and all that, there's not enough. We don't talk about the goodness enough.
Yeah.
And so on the Fridays here on Let's Talk, we're going to create the space for the goodness, for the black goodness, for the black excellence. Because we just need to hear more of it, don't we, brother?
Because even the media, I've turned off the media. We hear so much negativity about the world, about this and that, and it just keeps going. There's not much good said about blackfellas in the media. So, you know, us as people, there's so much deadly people in these communities.
And we know it. We hear it all the time. Contact us. You know, we see the good stuff going on. We see uncles and aunts doing stuff without any funding or resources, but just doing it for the sake of their community.
And it just comes back to connection. We're connected with each other. We want to share that love. We want to share that message with each other. And you know, it's okay. It's also like if you're not feeling too well, it's okay to feel that way. You know, we have down days. That's what life's about. But getting back up, getting on your feet, you know, moving.
Yeah. I just want to change course here for a second. I want to talk about addiction and sobriety. You know, I got goosebumps when I talk about this, Wesley. I think it's just so beautiful, brother. But you've been sober for 1,540, will it be 46 days now?
Because sent me this
2 days ago.
Yep.
That's incredible.
Oh yeah.
So I want to talk about this journey.
Yep.
And I was talking before, but I really want to investigate. Well, I want you to talk about how you flick the switch.
Yeah.
And how you keep it flicked.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of us, myself included, I can flick it for a few days.
Yeah.
And I can go on a bit of a health journey and then it weans back.
Yep.
What was it for you that made you give up the drink?
Yep.
what made you flick the switch, and how have you been able to maintain it for 1,546 days, Wesley?
Yeah. It's a great journey. I love it. So I go back to my childhood. I go back, you know, as far as I can remember, and my family, we love, and like us all, you know, we love the charge.
Love a charge.
We love the charge, you know, sitting around.
Put on Neon Moon,
oh,
and there we go.
Proper. but being a young fella, I always had a couple. There was a few uncles, you know, telling me don't do this and don't do that. I really did listen. And shout out to Uncle Gomer. He's one of my deadly uncles. He's been there. He was the main one to grab me and say, look, you need to stop this. Mm. And it's grog. You know, you won't lead down that. And he's sober himself. So I looked at, you know, my uncles and aunties and cousins and that, and they traveled down this path. This path led down to this destination. And at the start, I knew I didn't want to go down drugs and go down this and that, but alcohol, it's just so accepted. It's so accepted.
And it's
that
so easy.
It's so accepted. It's every bottle I was on, every corner. And, you know, I had to make a decision because inside myself there was something calling, and I hated the feeling of you know, being hungover, wasting my weekends away, doing the same thing year after year after year. And so I made the change. Me and the missus, we you know, we had our last drink. I still remember it. At the back of my house with a couple of my brothers, and that was the last drink I had, the last sip, the last taste of alcohol. And we started on this journey. I had to deactivate everything, get off all my socials. I had to back away from a lot of people to put myself first. And it really does. Having kids, it comes down to my kids. Yeah. I want them to live a better life than I did. I want to give them the things that I wish I had. And I love everything about my life. I had so much love from my family. You know, I would not change a thing.
Mm.
But the things that I can give my kids, just from, you know, me changing one thing in my life, it's incredible.
Can I ask? It's beautiful that you did it with your partner and you did it together. How has it been, I guess, sticking with it? Like, and then you're talking about isolating, withdrawing from your friends a bit in social media,
yep,
because you want to protect yourself,
yep,
and I guess any temptations.
Yep.
Is that isolating hard to do? Is it negative? Is it, like almost entering into a sort of self-rehab sort of thing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm just sort of talking, you know.
Yes, going down.
Yeah, because so, I want to know more about that to understand it.
Yeah, so I backed away because week in, week out, I was doing the same thing with the same brothers. I love them to death. Now, my journey now, they're still doing the same thing. But at the start, I had to back away for my own self and put me first and you know, this is my path and what I wanted to do. So I had to back away, but it I think 3 months was really hard. 6 months it got easier. By the end of that year, I was driving around my brothers, you know, picking them up at 2 a.m. and being that one for them, that pillar.
You're the designated driver.
Oh, that's him. That's
you
him.
Went from the designated drinker to the designated it. Driver.
And to be that person, I wish I had that. I had nobody there to pick me up. Marty had to walk home, you know, like, yeah. So coming out of it, I came out a lot more strong mentally, and the temptation eventually just faded off. I drive past the bottle now. And there's not one thought, but I came back to, I didn't own the drug, or I didn't own the alcohol. It owned me, and it ruled my mind, and it ruled me as a person. So it had power over me.
Yep.
I didn't have the power over it. Now there's nothing. There's not. It's not even
you're
a conversation
a slave to
it. There.
Yeah.
And I can just see the way people speak about this drink and that drink and that. And I can see where they're going down, and they're a slave to the drug.
Yeah.
I'm on another drug now. it's that energy, you know, the Owen Craig, he speaks about it, chasing that energy. I'm chasing this energy. It's just I'm addicted to this drug, but the energy it gives me so much more, fills up my heart with love and positivity, and I'm on the other side of the coin.
Yeah, and it sounds like – and one of the things I love about you, Wesley, is that you're not real preachy with your journey. I find some people out there, and I'm not talking about our mob so much, but just a lot of fitness and health people and influencey sort of stuff on social media, whatnot, can get very preachy and judgmental.
Yeah.
You're not like that.
No, because I know I've been there. And and for my brothers, you know, all I do is I can just be there for them when they come to me, and I can keep pushing me and keep pushing the story. And it is, if I can do it, anyone can do it. It's we're all built the same. It's just our mind. We need to focus on controlling our mind and focus where our thoughts and that our path go down and try and redirect it. But I love my brothers. I still kick it with them. We play footy and this and that, and I'm in the sheds, and there's beer getting passed around, and that's all good. I'm sitting there, and I love them. I love them to death, and I wouldn't judge them. You know, because I've been there. That's a part of me.
Is your journey respected by your teammates?
Yes.
There's no judgment there. They go, no, he's right. Because I find that's really important that, you know, our brothers back us too. If we've made choices in our lives for positivity, even give us a clearer mind.
Yeah.
Is that supported by our mob?
Yes. And it's a two-way street, because I support them as well. Like when they come, you know, and ask a few questions, I'm putting my energy into that, and I'm giving them my all, because hopefully I can redirect them and their journey. But yeah, no judgment, just love. That's all it is, love for both ways. And I only wish the best. I wish the best for all my brothers, you know, that's going through it, because it's so it can get so overwhelming, you know, all the pressures of life.
Yeah,
and life. It can be so much going on that we really forget to live, and that's my thing, is, you know, now I'm living, I'm 32, so if I can redirect someone's path at 18, at 20, if someone would have tapped me on the shoulder, pulled me aside, give me all these tools, never know where I would be, you know. Yeah. So if I can help anyone, and that's not to say older as well, because there's so many older uncles, you know, that's changing their path. One of my mates, shout out to him, you know, he just spoke to me yesterday. He's 25 days sober. 25 days, it mightn't seem like much, but I'm so proud.
Congratulations, brother. Yeah.
I'm so proud of him, you know.
That's a lot, man. 25 days is a lot.
And that's in the fight. That's in the struggle. And that's the most, you know, the worst part. But I'm contacting him. I'm hitting him up, you know, just being there to talk to, just to lean on, as, you know, like as – We need.
I think it's the hardest thing you can do as a black fella is healing and go on that journey, particularly by yourself.
Mm.
And, you know, we see all forms of addiction out there, whether it's just a cigarette, whether it's coffee. Mm. I mean, you've talked about giving up coffee.
Yeah.
Whether it's Yandy. You know, my little brother and sister are ice addicts.
Yeah.
You know, that's out there everywhere in the community. But there is, you know, there is help and there is support available. And if we can sort of go somewhere today with this, from triggering people to sort of think about getting help and whatnot. But
so leaning, you know, on people, we have loved ones. We have loved ones around us, friends, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers. And, you know, when something really bad, tragic goes on in the community, we all band together, we come together. But we can catch that before that. We just need to be there for one another, no judgment, and we need to connect. We need to connect with one another, because you just don't know what's going on. The world is so crazy at the moment. You don't know, you can't judge, what I say, judge a book by its cover, because behind the scenes, you know, they might be smiling and this and that, but it's just so sad to see, you know, that they're going through all this stuff behind the scenes.
Mm.
And all it takes, really, it just takes time to stand aside and let it out. You know, I cry all the time. I drive in my car and a song pops up. I'm crying, but they're good. I'm releasing all these emotions, and
I'm glad you brought this up, because black fellas don't cry, bro.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
And I think it's certainly a purging and a healing when you do cry.
Mm.
I find it hard to cry myself unless I'm at a funeral or something.
Mm.
But as I'm going on this healing journey more and more, it's, you're trying to tap into your emotions. which is hard to do, you know. And I guess, you know, blackfellas maybe see crying as a sign of weakness or softness. And it's not the case, is it, bro? I see it as a sign of strength.
Yeah, it is, because once you release that, it's kind of like shedding your shedding skin. You evolve, you grow, and it's gone. It leaves you. I think what drugs do is they cloud that, and they like alcohol, it keeps, it's like covering it up, but it does eventually seep out. It seeps out of us one way or another. So the faster you can, you know, sit there and I'll go down the path of my grandfather. He raised me. I love him to death. Rest his soul. But I had a scare maybe 2.5 years in. He passed away, and I didn't really know how to deal with it, because as 6 months old, my nan and my pop raised me, and he's like a pillar. He meant so much to me. He came to all my footy games, and me and him used to charge and have, he loved rum. He loved Tawley, you know, that Bundy rum. But when he passed, these emotions came over me, and I had to question him. All he wanted, like, he was so proud of me and the person I became. I thought, I'm just going to go buy a Tawley, and I want to drink one for him. And I was going to do it that day, driving to the Bottle-O. I was going to grab one and have one for him. But I remember the words that he used to tell me, I'm so proud of who you are, and I'm so proud of your sobriety, you know. And
he wouldn't want you to have that Tawley.
No, he didn't, and I didn't. I drove straight past the Bottle-O and went home. I cried some more. It sat with me, but I felt so, you know, so deadly when all that left my body, and it just gave me more power, and it really directed my path even more. And this is the journey I'm walking, and I'm loving it.
Well, let's continue the yarn around that journey, and particularly challenges and challenging yourself. You just did the Goggins Challenge. Now, the Goggins Challenge is it's 4 miles by 4 hours in 48 hours.
Yeah.
Can you just break that down and tell our audience what the Goggins Challenge is? Tell us who David Goggins is and tell us why you did it.
So, David, the Goggins Challenge, 4 miles. When I first looked at it, I'm thinking, 4K, that's nothing. Then I did the math.
4 miles. Four miles.
Is six. I think 6.47 kilometres, but I did 6.5, just to round it up. 6.5 kilometres every 4 hours for 48 hours. So Friday, I came home from work last Friday and 4 o'clock. So I got home at 3, 4 o'clock I was starting. So I did my first run at 4. 4 o'clock, 4 p.m., 8 p.m. and 12 a.m. And that went for 48 hours. It was very tricky. It was very tricky to get any sleep, because my run and then my walk home was about an hour. So I only had 3 hours rest. In between that, I needed to eat, stretch.
Man, my knees are hurting. Just you talking here.
Yeah, and I needed to eat, stretch, and then somehow, get the sleep. I needed the rest. So the first run, I went gung-ho, you know, so excited. This is going to be easy.
Out of the box real quick, cuz, eh?
And I was that sore when I got home. I'm thinking, what have I done? What have I got myself into here?
So you should have learned from the football carnivals, the money carnivals and the Crewe knockouts, to pace yourself,
yeah,
cuz.
It's the last game that matters. But, yeah, I stretched and I broke it down. Before I started, I broke it down. These emotions came over me of failure. The fear crept in. You can't do this. But I answered that call with breaking it down into four sections, and the middle four would be the toughest. The first four, easy. 4, 8, 12, 4.
Yep.
And the sleep I got in between. And then the middle section would be the hardest, and then the last four would be the easiest. I think the middle and the last four were the hardest, because I just wanted to get it done. And my body, I think I ran on 6.5 hours sleep for 48 hours.
I was going to ask you, how much sleep do you think you got in that total of 48 hours?
And we are, and this is how I know that we're all the same. When the alarm went off and I needed to get up and go, I just wanted to sleep in. I just wanted to press stop. But
What kept you going? Because I don't know, if you're doing this by yourself, I know our CEO up here, Dry Lawton, come and did a couple of legs with you.
Yeah.
But what kept you going? What kept you from basically dogging it yourself? You
so
know?
I go deep. I go deep here. This is where...
Tell me.
This is where what keeps me going is my ancestors, is our... Bus. You know, we got a foundation of 65,000 years. That's our foundation. That's what keeps me going. And seeing my younger brothers, cousins, friends, uncles go at a young age, and it's so sad that they haven't lived to their fullest. When that thought comes over me and I sit up and I was telling Jai this and I breathe and I tell myself, you're alive. You are alive. And I chuck my shoes on. You got nothing to worry about. You know, I'm fully healthy. I'm capable. I've got no disabilities and this and that. And we let all this stuff tell our mind that we're not so great. We're not. And that
it
there,
looks for excuses.
Yeah, we do.
Doesn't
we
it?
Let them. We let them. You know, take over what we really want to do. So I tell myself I'm alive. I've got nothing to worry about. It's okay. And then I trick my mind. I trick my mind into saying, like, it's not hard. You can walk. It's not that far. It's only around the corner there, you know, when really 6.5K. As I get out there, then I'm in the zone and I'm in that flow state and I'm in that competitiveness. Then I kick on.
Yeah, because I find it quite incredible too, Wesley, in that you've played so many Q Cup games and so much football in your life, Murray Carnivals, Koori Knockouts, etc. And you're only 32. Most football players, their knees and ankles are just completely buggered.
Yeah.
But you're still able to go on and do this,
yeah,
you know?
That there.
Even my hip starts going, you know?
I love my uncles. I go back to my uncles, you know, and they all say that I let myself go.
These are your idols, right?
These are my idols. I love them to death.
Yep.
I love them. They laid the pavement, you know, for us to come through. And they say, I let myself go or this and this and this. I don't want to do that. I want to keep that drive and I want to keep that fire inside. So at the age of 50, and I'll even go at the age of 60, I can still do this. Mm-hmm. I'm capable and I'm hungry, and that hunger will always be there. And I think it just comes back to, I know the feeling of the when you complete it, that, and I get home in that cold shower, I sit down and I sit there. When I'm in the pain, when I'm in the hurt and this and that, and in my mind I tell myself, I've earned all of this. Mm. I've earned every bit of this soreness, and it feels amazing. It does.
What is it about David Goggins and his mentality and his, I guess, his way of life that draws you in? I was saying to you before, because I'm ex-military.
Yep.
And that sort of resonated with me. It helps push me and motivate me. Mm. I did 5 years in the Australian Army way back in the 90s. But what is it about David Goggins? And as we said before, it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just what draws you and what resonates you and what motivates you. But for you, what was it?
So for David Goggins, he speaks of his journey, and he speaks of his journey that he could have went down this path. This path over here to the right is where it's so easy, is where he's comfortable, is where, you know, you can pile on the weight, you can – You're not accountable, and he's going to life, going to work, living his life, daily routine, not really pushing himself. And then he's got this other path, and I get it, because there's his little, you know, there's a demon on my left shoulder and an angel on my right. We can hear the demon throwing all these temptations at us really, yep, really loud. This little voice over on the right is real quiet. But what Goggins says is you need to turn that voice right up. You need to listen to that and you need to act on it. So over to the left here, Goggins talks about this other path. And this path is where the pain, where the hurt, where the misery, you know, this is a dirt path. Here's the highway. You're in your car. You're cruising over to the right here. Over to the left, you're walking. There's mountains. There's desert. There's sweat. There's pain. There's all this stuff. But he figured out something in the mind that if you take this path, it's longer, it's harder, but the rewards from that and the person that you become is it doesn't stop. Mm. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, I find, and as we were saying before, it's the hardest part of running for me is just making it to the start line. Once I'm running, then that black fella competitive kicks in and, you know, the little Maury mentality starts going, get to that tree, get to that, you know, don't quit. So I think the hardest part of the journey is just getting there and starting. Do you find that?
Like, yes.
Because once you're in it, you know, we want to reach the goal. And I just find black fellas just generally just don't quit. They're not quitters.
So I went for a run this morning. I needed to. I'm so nervous coming on here. I went for a run. And it doesn't stop, though. You push yourself so far. I went through the hurt, and I still get that. Stop, stop. What are you doing? But if you keep running and you keep running and you keep running, eventually that you overcome that. When I first started running way back when, I couldn't even run 5 kilometres without stopping ages. And my missus, she could run 5K under 25 minutes. And
really?
I could not do it. She's so – and that's who I'm competing against. She's so deadly.
Fierce. But, look out, Commonwealth Games.
But, yeah, she could do it under 25 minutes. And I'm thinking I'm fit and this and that, and I couldn't do it. But there's a rhythm to it, and it comes back to the breathing, and you pace yourself out. But the challenge of just getting out of the house, I still get it today. But pushing yourself when you're out there, you know, and next time I come back, I got a target to get to, you know, and that's it. You just got to keep showing up, showing up.
I just want to go back to talking about idols again, and then sort of finding new idols, new people to sort of help, you know, drive you to where you want to go, and I guess influence your life in a very positive way. You're talking about your uncles before.
Yeah.
You know, we've all got those uncles in community.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the other idols you look to later in life, and I guess why?
So there was a time there when I idolized all, you know, my local idols. I love them to death. So deadly to see them in my community. And I can go up and you know, hug them, have a chat and this and that, and I still do today. But we evolve and we grow as we get older, and we broaden, we expand our the way we look at things. My idols changed when I changed and when I started to grow. I talk about rugby league. I had idols at the Jets or in Q Cup, but I couldn't see them when I was little. I didn't know who they are. I didn't know. I didn't know anything about them. As I grew up, I got to play a few games with them, you know, and see them now after their career, and they're still active and they're still fit and they're still strong. I look up to them. And then getting on the internet, listening to podcasts, and my wife, again, I'll come back, she found Goggins and she passed him on to me. And his life, it can resonate with all of us, being a black fella, having racism, being put down, you know, his family, his dad going through his stuff and put it back on the kids. And now he's figured out something. And this is where I go to. I run a lot of the time now. I don't look out anymore. I used to look out and look out and look out and compare. Now I'm looking in and I'm looking at myself. And it's like I'm running to the beat of my own drum, and I'm keeping myself accountable, and I'm kind of idolizing me. So now I'm looking in, and I just keep evolving, and there's levels to it, you know. There's levels, and it's always hard. Mm. It doesn't get easier.
What's been the biggest difference for you? Since you and your wife, and by the way, next time you're coming, can you bring your wife in so we can have a yarn to her too, please? She sounds quite inspirational, brother. But what's been the biggest thing, like, you know, in a real black sense, in a real tangible sort of sense for our mob out there, what's been the biggest positive and the biggest change for you and your family since you've both entered in this, I guess, sobriety and just living clear and healthy?
The biggest change, I think, is not caught in the cycle. And it's a cycle that I created. It's a cycle of the week to week, round and round. Like we spoke about, stuck in stagnant water.
Yes.
I feel like I'm flowing, and I feel like I'm moving, and my emotions are flowing, my blood's moving, my energy's moving, and I feel like I can look forward instead of looking back.
Because what happens when you stay stagnant, brother?
I know. Nothing. It's poison.
What can live in stagnant water?
It is. It's algae, poisonous stuff. And life is flowing water.
Yeah.
Life is, that's us.
And blackfellas, we are the elements. Yes. We are water, we are fire, we are wind, we are the earth, you know?
So, you know, I look 10 years ago, if you'd tell me I would be sober, I would be married, I would have three beautiful kids, I would be healthy, I would have had this career in rugby league, I would have reached these levels, I would have travelled here and there and everywhere, I couldn't believe you. I would not believe you. I'd tell you, you know, da-da-da-da. Now, looking at me now and looking at the next 10 years, I'm imagining what I'm going to accomplish and what I'm going to tell that fella. I'm excited and I'm looking forward to it. And then the next 10 years after that, I'm so driven to keep going because I've found something that works. And any of us can. It just takes time to step aside from our daily life and put ourselves first. I picture all of these cups, and this is my family's cups, and we're in a pyramid coming up.
Mm-hmm.
If I fill my cup, if I fill it up and it overflows, my family reap the rewards and they get the goodness, the love, the positivity, and that's how it is. You need to fill your cup first because we go to life, we go to work, we do all this stuff for all these other people, we forget about ourselves. You need to think about you, put you first.
Yeah, well said, brother, well said. And look, I'm going to start winding us up, but, yeah, it's been a pretty amazing chat. But I just want to, just impart some wisdom on our community out there just before we go. And if you'd like to just offer some advice to young fellas and young sisters at the crossroads of their journeys, wherever that may be, and you look back on your younger self, Wesley, you know, what do you say to yourself and these young ones out here?
Because
you know, most of us don't want to get stuck in a cycle of drinking and smoking yandy and doing this, bro. We want to have healthy and happy lives. It's just we know that sometimes our trauma out there can get in the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, making good choices sometimes is really bloody hard to do as black fellas because there's a lot of pain that we carry and a lot of pressure from other mob, peer pressure and all this and that.
So?
Your Friday wisdom, my brother, imparted on us, please.
The anger and the hurt inside, you know, we all have it. We need to try and heal it. Once we heal that, once we heal ourselves, we can heal others. We've got to heal ourselves first. And if you were to go back and tell me, stop this and stop that, I wouldn't listen to you. But we all come to a crossroads, and if any of the, you know, stuff that I talk about today has triggered a few things, and you question that, and you either go left or right like Goggins. Everyone's got a choice. We come to the crossroads, you go left or right. But if you're dealing with your trauma and you're dealing, you know, with your mental issues, my old uncle used to play Dr. Hook all the time. Storms never last, you know. Storms never last, and they don't, you know. They too shall pass. So if you're feeling any type of way, sadness, sorrow, even if you're happy, it does not last. Let it pass and let the cycle continue. So, yeah, storms never last.
Storms never last. Well, with that, Wesley, thanks for coming back in. Please come back, bro.
Oh, will do. I had so much fun here, eh?
So here's nothing to be nervous about, cuz. Eh?
You want to keep? Yeah, true that.
You won massive football games. You ain't talking
easy,
to me, bro.
Though. That's easy.
Well, thanks for joining us on Let's Talk today. Like I said, Fridays are our positive days of spreading black excellence all across this beautiful black nation. I didn't get to say it at the start of the show because I was a bit flustered with the desk here, but I just want to dedicate this show to all the brothers and sisters out there in jails. We know most of you shouldn't be there, but just know here at AAA Murray Country, we are thinking of you, mob, and all of our community here today. Have a beautiful Black Friday, people.
Black man, tell me all his stories, show me all his tribal ways, see the paintings of his fathers, pictures of their dreamtime days. Hear the dingo howling mournful, o'er the dusty plain so white, the moon has turned the red to silver, as the white ghost goes. pictures of their dreamtime day. Hear the curlew's call of sadness as the dancing min-mins toss. Ghostly lights in an ancient country, land beneath